Apple sent out invites to its event on September 12th. This is the real one, right? This is the one they sent me. Also, upload whatever you want to the FCC.gov website and all the news from IFA, including what it stands for in German. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1844, recorded Thursday, August 31st, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we are going to give a little pizzazz to today's tech news. Give it a little, I don't know, glitter.
Yeah. Put a little tech in your heart.
We're going to put a little tech in your heart. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. This is going to be a big day for you, Megan, because Apple confirmed something today.
They confirmed that they do not want me to come to their event. I was thinking that they did, but they don't. They sent out invitations to everyone but me to their big event on September 12th. It's called Let's Meet at Our Place, where I am not invited. That's what the invites to the Steve Jobs Theater on the new Apple campus said. We pretty much told you all about what we expect to see there. Three new iPhones, a 4K compatible Apple TV, and possibly a new Apple Watch. It might still be a while before you can get your hands on some of the new iPhones because of what analysts are calling constrained supplies. Then the only thing that usually comes out the day of the September event is the next operating system. The company released iOS Beta 9 today and public Beta 8. So at least we've got that.
Yeah, you got that to hang your hat on. Do they normally send you event invites and they did not this time?
If by normally you mean never, then yes.
Oh, well, they need to change that. Seriously, Megan needs to be there. How big is this auditorium? They could probably fit one more person.
1,000 people. But I'm busy. I got plans. I'll be sitting in this chair or that chair with Leo. We're going to talk about the event while it happens, do our best not to speak over the good parts. And, you know, maybe make a little fun of what people are wearing, whether their shirts are untucked. Perhaps we'll play a little bingo as we have in the past. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. Join us there. We'll don't feel bad if you didn't get an invite. Join us here. We will always save a seat for you. You are always invited.
That's true.
Here with us.
As long as net neutrality rules allow for it. Mm-hmm. You will always get our full res bandwidth. Mm-hmm. Do you want to pick apart the invite? Because usually they kind of hide little things in the invite. If you take a look at the graphic from the invite.
Like, I do want to do that.
What is it pointing to, do you think?
It's, I don't know. It looks a little bit like my face. This is what the invites look like.
Yes. Oh, so maybe you will be there. Maybe they're hinting that you will, in fact, be there. This is all a ruse.
Let's meet at our place, obviously, because this is the first event to be held in the Steve Jobs Theater. I don't know what that picture is of.
I know. I've looked at this picture a lot, and I figured it out.
Is it a finger touching a ear pod?
Close. It's not what it is, Megan.
Okay.
It's a piece of Chiclet chewing gum on top of a finger.
Oh, so there's going to be a Chiclet keyboard.
Oh, I hadn't made that info. I just thought Apple gum. Confirmed.
I don't think there's going to be Apple gum. Okay, well, look what I just got in the mail here.
Oh, you're so lucky. You're so not lucky. I'm sorry. Apparently, Apple doesn't really have very good designers for the things they mail out to people. but for this invite on the web, it looks a little better, I'd say. I'm sorry you're not gone.
No, like I said, I'm happy to be here. I don't have to drive anywhere. I get to hang out with Leo and you guys. It's all fine.
All right. At first, I had planned to talk about how Apple broke its silence on net neutrality and urged the FCC to not loosen rules that would allow ISPs to throttle and control content providers, likely its content, the day after public comments closed on the FCC site, by the way. And then I ran across this. Apparently, the FCC.gov site allows pretty much anyone to upload any file to their site, which can then be made accessible via the FCC.gov domain. The public API that literally anyone allows those who know what to do with it the ability to throw pretty much anything on the .gov website. So executables, PDFs, MP4 files, which I'm sure you can imagine get sticky when you consider that this might be a malware artist's dream, serving up some illegitimate site on a very legitimate site. Apparently, this person that discovered this, he obtained a key legitimately through the FCC's comment system. He said the comment system was borked or something like that. He was able to get the access through there, proceeded to upload a very anti-Agit Pi message. We don't need to put it on the screen, but yes, it is. And so if you follow the link, I mean, it looks like a legitimate link. That's because it is a legitimate link from FCC.gov. It's just there's all this stuff being hosted there that you would imagine the government would not want hosted there.
And it's still there. I mean, it's still there. We have the links in there to several memes. Kevin, you can click on them. I mean, hopefully you click on them. I'm still there.
This thing really totes my goats.
I can upload right now. I tried to upload an image of you, Jason, now, but it says unsupported file types. I don't have a PDF of you.
Good. I'm going to steer clear of this. See, the person that uploaded this is now actually very worried because he discovered this and uploaded, not thinking that anyone would ever find out that he, in fact, uploaded something to there. And now a lot of people are wondering if he actually violated the FCC's terms of service for, you know, serving files through their site. Now, granted, he believes he didn't, since he never actually applied for the API key. He got it through the comment system that he said was faulty. But even if you do sign up for the API legitimately through the site, the FCC apparently isn't even offering up the terms of service for you to agree to. So I guess it's you know, a little unknown whether you're violating terms of service. And if you are, you're messing with the government. So please don't put my image on there. Okay. I don't need the FCC in my life.
Kevin, you do it. You had it. Bring it up. Can you click on the drop files here on that link and then...
No.
Kevin.
Kevin, protect yourself. Don't... Megan's trying to get you.
Robotics company Zipline has begun to use its drones to deliver blood to Rwanda's blood transfusion centers. The BBC reports that the company will soon expand to Tanzania, making it the largest drone delivery company in the world. They have 4 distribution centers, more than 100 drones. Zipline will make more than 2,000 flights a day to save lives with blood and other medical supplies. The sturdy drones are able to fly through tropical rainstorms and hilly, high-altitude terrain. I'm always excited when there's tech for good.
Absolutely.
They opened in Rwanda in the fall of 2016. It's a San Francisco company. They're doing good. And there's been a lot of talk. There's been some talk, too, in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, like, can we use drones to find people who are still, who need rescue? And right now the FAA says it's against the law to fly your drone over Hurricane Harvey because a lot of people were trying to get awesome footage of it, to put up on YouTube. So there was a lot of traffic. I've read that they probably will use drones in the future to survey and assess the damage.
Yeah, this is honestly, this is technology being used for good, like you said, and that's an awesome thing. It's a fixed wing drone fleet. It can haul 2 kilograms, that's around 4.5 pounds, of cargo across 160 kilometers, which is around 100 miles round trip, so 50 miles each way. They say delivery costs are on par with other transport costs. And, I mean, especially in this region, road deliveries for things that are very important often arrive too late in the case of an emergency. And so this is a way to kind of bypass that. And they say this is a solution to a problem that has existed for a very long time. So they can't wait to kind of put it into place, test it out and see how it does and potentially expand that to other areas. Blood, emergency vaccines, HIV, malaria medication, sutures, IV tubes, emergency supplies, all sorts of stuff. Up to 4.5 pounds, that's, you can pack a lot of small, cargo in there for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've also talked about drones being used for organ delivery, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. It's not just to get your Domino's pizza to you.
No, Thankfully, it's not just Domino's pizza. There's other pizza that I'm sure will come via delivery on drones someday in the future. We have that to look forward to. Lyft announced that it now offers its full service coverage in 40 states in the U.S. and can reach all parts of 32 states, everywhere in those states, even hard-to-reach rural areas. Lyft is broadening its service to reach underserved regions in the hopes that it can continue to make gains on rivals like Uber, its biggest rival, who offer to primarily urban areas, although Uber has expanded into some of these other places. They tout near statewide coverage in 13 states. Lyft has been actively recruiting for the broadened coverage for months in smaller towns. And yeah, I mean, you know, Lyft's doing what it needs to do to kind of fill in gaps. If this is a shortcoming of Uber's fleet, then that's a great way to kind of get, you know, a few steps ahead, is to serve these communities that are not served at all by ride sharing, because eventually they will have to be served. So you might as well be first.
Yeah, and I think the issue is whether they, what does serve mean? Like, oh yeah, we're there. It'll take you 45 minutes to get a car. You know, it's like, if you're going to depend on it, it has to be some, if you're used to Uber in cities, you know, it's probably not going to be as fast as it is there. But I've been really surprised in Petaluma. I mean, we're not exactly a rural area.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've surprised other people to say, yeah, it's pretty easy to get a Lyft here. You know, they're around. So for a while, Lyft is going to pay drivers more in order to go to these rural areas, which that's always the thing. Like if you have to take a Lyft to San Francisco or something, and then I feel kind of bad sending the people, when I go back from San Francisco to Petaluma, I feel kind of bad. I'm like, good luck.
Because then they're up here. I hope you find something, someone that randomly needs to go to San Francisco again to make it worth your time.
Yeah. So Lyft's going to pay them more for a while.
Okay. Well, that's nice. I wonder how long they'll do that before switching that up. But wait times, obviously, they're going to be longer than normal. You're not going to have a fleet of like 20 drivers in a town of 4,000 people or less, you know, just navigating around to be there within 5 minutes. But options are good. I wonder, you know, what kind of options some of these places have without something like Lyft being accessible. Even if it is a 45-minute wait, you can also schedule these things in advance. They recommend Lyft's scheduled ride service in that case, if it's, you know, just to make sure that you have something arriving in time. Maybe some of these areas don't even have cab service, and this is actually a really, you know, quite an open door for them. Now it's an option. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good alternative.
Coming up next, the news from IFA. That's the Consumer Electronics Show put on by the German Association of Entertainment and Communications Electronics. And why it's called IFA, you only know if you speak German. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system, and it's designed for entrepreneurs. And lots of the top entrepreneurs are already using it. Grasshopper works just like your traditional phone system, but instead of having to go out and purchase a bunch of hardware right when you're starting out your business, you don't have to. You can use the phone that you have, and you can use the phones that the people who work for you have. They have an iOS app and an Android app, and then callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. You don't have to give out your personal phone number. Keep your business and your personal stuff separate. Simply select a toll-free or a local number. Then you can record a custom greeting and then even add multiple extensions for your business. Maybe it's just you, but you have a bunch of extensions to make you look even more professional. And you put on a funny voice when someone calls and say, let you talk to Sarah. And then Sarah has a different voice. You can do that with Grasshopper. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing and make your business sound more professional. Set up department and employee extensions, like I said, whether or not you have employees, with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive text messages from your business number. Join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month, and you can try it. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you don't like it, you can get your money back, but I think you will like it. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. And you can save $50 on your order. Just go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support.
User 21952 in the chat room has the full name IFA Internationale Funkausstellung Berlin. How did I do? Probably not very good. But IFA 2017 is in fact underway in Berlin right now, which means an avalanche of hardware announcements. Protect yourself, please. In an effort to keep you informed, let's take a look at a few of those announcements that stood out to us. First up, we have the long-awaited unveiling of the LG V30 premium smartphone. I feel like we've been hearing about this for at least a couple of months now. LG says the V30 is first at a few things. First, to offer a phone this light in the 6-inch display category. So lightest 6-inch phone to date. Also first to offer dual rear cameras with f1.6 aperture, I believe it was. So they'll be good in low light. The phone doesn't have its own voice assistant, but relies on Google's assistant, which is good. LG even worked in device-specific control via Google's assistant. So you could say, okay, G, take a wide-angle selfie, and it would know what to do with that. I think that's a first. Because I haven't heard of assistant really being tailored to devices specifically.
Oh, devices.
In that way, yeah, device control.
Because you could ask Siri to take a selfie, and sometimes she even does it when you ask her.
I don't know if you, if I was to ask assistant to take a selfie, I don't know if it would necessarily do that. But if they're, well, I guess I could try it. What do you think? And I'll try it.
What do I think of the LG phone? Well, if you have a bunch of LG appliances, I think that is great because it will work with like your washer and dryer so that, you know, your phone can talk to your clothes, which is awesome. Who doesn't want their phone to talk to their clothes? I don't know. I mean, I think that I don't know who would get this instead of the S8. There's no pricing, so I don't know if it'll be compatible or not. Have you figured out? Are you going to try it?
Yeah, comparable. The pricing is probably going to be, I mean, to the S8, it's probably going to be comparable. This is definitely LG's like premium smartphone for the year, and it's definitely going to hit U.S. markets and other markets, but it's South Korea. It's going to start there. It's September 21st. But yeah, without pricing, I mean, last year's the V20, I believe, was somewhere around $800, so it's a pricey phone. You know, it's their top line. Let's see if I can do this here. So what is it? Take a selfie? That's the action?
That's what it is for Siri. Try Google.
Take a selfie.
Did it crash?
Oh, it's waiting. It's take a selfie. All right. It took a little while to get there.
But it did it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Then I'm curious to know, is the customization the fact that that the example that they gave was wide angle selfie?
Right.
I don't know. Like, I guess I need to know what the wide angle selfie feature of the LG V30 is. But if that's an actual customization, like that makes sense on a V30 and not on any other Android smartphone, that would be the first that I remember of hearing someone customize assistant around like a hardware function. So I guess that's something.
It is something. Have you ever used an LG phone regularly?
No, not really. I mean, let's think about this. The Nexus 5 was LG. The Nexus 5X is LG.
So
when you go to towards the Nexuses, the Nexus 5 was one of my all-time favorite phones. But that was built with Google's input. And it would just happen to be manufactured by LG. That was a great phone. LG's other phones, like their V20 and, you know, the V series, I mean, I've tested them. I haven't lived with them for a super long time. I don't know why. This doesn't hold my attention. Or I review too many phones. Probably the latter. The Moto X is back, speaking of phones, with Motorola's new Moto X 4 smartphone. Though it's not following the bezel-less trend, it does offer dual rear-facing cameras, one 12-megapixel and a wide-angle 8-megapixel, both at f2.0 aperture, so likely not the best when it comes to low-light performance. Motorola is also bringing Amazon Alexa on board, even to the lock screen, so you can control it from the lock screen, similar to what it did, what HTC did with the U11. But don't worry, Google's assistant is still there too. So it's, you know, one of those devices where you have multiple assistants working for you. We were kind of talking about that a little bit yesterday. It's not like they intermingle. They don't trade information, but you can summon one or summon the other depending on what you need to do.
But they don't talk to each other. They pretend like each other's not there.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, you didn't ask me a question. I'm going to sleep.
I would be interested if anyone has used the HTC U11, used that Amazon Echo feature, and whether it was useful or not. I can't I mean, because I have the Echo, the Alexa app on my phone. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd be interested in knowing what that does. Like, can, I guess maybe you can play your flash briefing or...
Yeah, or maybe, you know, if you're connected to your home network and you have Echo throughout your home, if there's any kind of interconnectability between those devices that Alexa on board on a phone connected to the same network would allow for... Mm-hmm. You know, because I know, like, with my assistant on my phone, when I'm at my home, in my home network, I can control Google Home from my phone with voice actions if I don't want to do it just through the Google Home itself. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of interconnectivity. So maybe it kind of hinges on, like, what do you have at home? Do you have a Google Home? Great. Assistant's on board and you can control it and interconnect with that. Do you have an Echo or Echo Series device? Then you could do that here as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe something like that. Or expanded shopping functions, that sort of stuff.
So they did give a price. They said 399 euros, which is $475 or thereabouts. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's talking about the other smartphones that are $1,000.
Well, yeah. And I mean, this is definitely the X series used to be Motorola's top of the line back when Google owned Motorola. Now it's kind of the mid-range, one of the mid-range categories. The Z series is kind of their premium top of the line. So those are going to be priced more, have better specs. In this case, you get Snapdragon 630 chip instead of the Snapdragon 835 processor, which is what all the premium smart Android devices have right now. 5.2-inch 1080p display instead of like a 4K or a UHD display and a few other things. So definitely mid-ranger for sure. No Moto Mod support either. So if you want to get into the modular stuff that Motorola's doing, you can't do that here.
You can, however, take a panoramic selfie.
A pano selfie? Yeah. A wide-angle selfie?
Well, is that different than a panoramic? Is a wide-angle selfie the same as a panoramic selfie?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends, yeah.
I mean, like, the first thing I was like, does that mean, like, you're like, let me see my whole body? No, but it's probably like you're in front of the Grand Canyon and you're like, ah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember there was a Huawei phone. It wasn't called a Groofy. It was. They called it a Groofy. Instead of like a selfie, it was a Groofy, and it was basically a wide angle selfie, but it involved, it was kind of like what you're talking about. You'd tilt your phone, it would take a picture, and then it would merge all three and you'd have like a wide angle selfie. So it was kind of that. So
did everybody say that Groofy sounds too much like Roofy?
There was that. I know I felt that way. I think everybody just kind of felt like, don't make up words like that. Like, that's just lame.
Yeah. Well, there was the one that last week that I made up word. I can't remember. It wasn't wee-wee. It was a wee. Bothy.
Yeah. Bothy. See, they just can't help themselves. No. They got to make up their own words. It's like Garmin was listening to us talk about it last night. Garmin heard what we had to say about its watches yesterday and responded by quickly whipping together a new smartwatch. And 24 hours later, we have the Vivo Active 3 smartwatch. I'm pretty sure it didn't play out like that. They probably had this in the pipeline for a while. But I like to give ourselves credit.
We have a lot of pull in this world.
Totally. Totes my goats.
Didn't you see my invitation to the Apple event?
Yes, I did. It was amazing. And total, it was proof, too. It's an update to the Vivo Active HR. This time around, they're opting for a round time face. The Vivo Active HR was like a long, like rectangular face. This time it looks more traditional. Integrating something they call side swipe that allows for on-screen control by swiping your finger up and down the side bezel. So it's like a little touch zone on the side of the phone. So hand sweaters, rejoice. No more gunking up your display when you're in the middle of a race. With your sweaty fingers, you can just like swipe on the side and your display stays pristine. Yes, like that. Big creepy hand that does suddenly appeared on the screen. Kevin, is that your hand?
That's the iOS Today hand.
Oh, okay. Go away. Wrong show. What do you think?
I like it. If I try a Garmin, this will probably be what I try because it's cheaper than most of the other Garmins and it has the long battery life. And the Garmin Pay, which is great because then you're in the middle of a run and you need to stop for ice cream and you can and pay for it with your watch, which is good. I actually did that with my Apple Watch once just to test. Like mm-hmm. I was in the middle of a workout and then stopped, bought ice cream, and then it lets you pay with Apple Pay. It doesn't know you're buying ice cream, but it lets you pay, and then the workout continues. I mean, I did that for review purposes, of course. But no, actually, I just wanted ice cream in the middle of the run.
Did you continue working out with the ice cream in hand?
Yes.
Like
I did. You can run
with an ice cream.
Yeah,
at the top.
Ran home with the ice cream. I was really just walking in the store for ice cream.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it has GPS, and I like that. The Garmin Pay is not with Fitbit. They have Fitbit Pay, which they developed this on their own. But Garmin Pay, they built it on top of something called FitPay, which is another, you know, it's I guess it's for wearables because other people, I mean, maybe you need to stop for water or an energy bar. Like, it does make sense. You might have to buy something in the middle of your, especially if you're doing one of those crazy 200-mile runs or whatever we talked about yesterday. You might need to buy things.
Absolutely. Although mobile payment systems getting more crowded by the day, mm-hmm. getting some fragmentation in that category.
I'm also interested the stress monitoring, it has that, which is interesting. I would like to know how stressed I am at any time. I don't know how they do that. And then 15 different custom indoor and outdoor sports apps, which is good because that is also the problem I have with the Apple Watch. I do weird things that it can't track.
Right.
It only is really good at tracking running and walking and biking and rowing. And I do other things that I want to get my points for.
Mm-hmm. Man. Do you just spend a lot of time having to manually enter it in then?
No. Like I do an hour of a Pilates class and then I just call it Pilates, but I know I'm not getting the right amount.
Right.
Like because I'll also go on a 2-mile run and barely even sweat and it's like the same amount of calories and that's not true.
I see.
It doesn't have, you know, it needs to know because I'm not
it
going
needs to know
anywhere.
Exactly what you're doing and what intensity and all that kind of stuff.
But I think the new Apple Watch might have that, which I'm excited about. These are very small complaints that I have, really.
There's also VO2 max estimates on board, guided breathing exercises. This is like full workout watch here. Heart rate monitoring. $299 later this year for this particular model. Finally, Logitech announced a new kind of control surface for creative professionals called the Craft Keyboard. Aside from being a chiclet-style backlit keyboard, Craft includes a large rotating dial in the upper left-hand corner that acts as a multifunction control for tools and options within a limited list of compatible software environments. The dial can be rotated to increase or decrease the size of the active brush in Photoshop, for example. That's just one example. The top of the dial is touch sensitive, which then becomes useful for things like navigating contextual menus and other functions. So you can kind of use it when you're in a creative environment, creative software, Photoshop, Illustrator, Premiere, InDesign. Microsoft also has compatibility for Word, PowerPoint, Excel on Windows only at the moment, but they'll broaden it out to Mac. And you can just kind of use it when you're in the tools area or to select between tools, tap it to select it, and then do your control from the dial on the side. I'm sure it takes a little while to kind of get used to working in that paradigm, but kind of a neat way to control the creative things that you do.
Can you do it with, does it work with music too? Is this something you would?
I don't know if it works with music. I mean, it definitely reminded me a lot of controllers that exist in the music space. I imagine over time they'll probably add more functionality. And I mean, I could see that being a controllable, you know, dial for things in Pro Tools or Logic probably or whatever. I could see it being useful, but I mean, like, I have controllers at home that have many buttons and many knobs and everything, so I don't know if that would be specifically to my use case, but I'm sure, you know, having a single special control for creative purposes, you can kind of see how that would be useful. It almost kind of reminds me of the expanded functionality of the new MacBook Pros with the touch bar, you know, and having that kind of shift and morph depending on what software you're using. Instead of that, in this case, it's like a dial that does that.
You got to really want that dial, though. Otherwise, you're paying $200 for a keyboard.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. It remains to be seen how useful this actually ends up being. Like, my experience with stuff like this is that you get it because you think it's going to be totally useful. And if you, and then time goes by and you look back 6 months later and you're like, man, I hardly ever used that thing. I thought it was going to change my life. But you really have to completely upend your process, you know, upend how you work and dedicate yourself to it. And some people are willing to do that. Other times it just kind of seems more of an inconvenience than it does a convenience.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were showing how you would toggle between programs. And like right now, the toggle keys, you know, the command shift or whatever, I don't even, command tab, it's right where your hand is, you know, but otherwise you're going to have to reach up at that knob.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, all the way out there. It's, yeah, it's little things. I would agree. I mean, it's just outside of your, you know, what you're used to. Like, I think it's kind of the same, like I said, with the touch bar on the MacBook Pro. It offers all these functions. Are people like in the habit of using them or knowing to expect that a feature, that a function set is going to appear when I go into this piece of software and go into this screen? Some people, you know, get used to that or force themselves to get used to that, and then they end up, you know, being big users of that feature. Other people, I think it just kind of passes them by because they're so locked into their normal way of doing things.
Are you speaking from personal experience? Because you bought your wife the MacBook with the touch bar, right? Does she use it?
Yeah, actually, I've seen her use it a decent amount. But like, would I use the touch bar for musical, you know, music production? I haven't used it in that capacity. I don't know. Like, if it popped the thing up, as long as it's the right function, yeah, I probably would. But for everyday computing tasks, probably not. Yeah.
We got some feedback, which we always, always appreciate, positive or negative. Brian sent us a message about our discussion of net neutrality yesterday. He says, how quickly the need for net neutrality would disappear if local governments and local startups started providing service, causing the giants to have to actually compete for customers. The media have mentioned this, but only in passing, rather opting for the big government solution, which is what Ajit Pai is against. Government is not always the solution. I agree, Brian. This is a complicated issue, and there are more than two sides. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, we didn't talk much about Apple's Tim Cook's announcement. You know, he came out against net neutrality for the first time. He hasn't spoken about it. And he wants a strong, enforceable, open... Oh, he wants strong, enforceable, open protections. That's basically what he said in a nutshell. And I agree with that. I don't know how we're going to get there, but... I'm hoping that we will.
Yeah, and he was talking. He didn't really mention anything about kind of the idea of net of ISPs being more like a utility in that regard, and the government regulating it like it would be a utility. His point seemed to be more from less from that approach and more just about like, hey, this needs to be competitive, and there should not be a future where, you know, an independent company has content that it can't get through to its customers in a fast and speedy way because an ISP just decides, now we're going to deprioritize you versus something else. Does that come from government regulation or not? They didn't really say that. Apple didn't really say that specifically, but they definitely voiced their opinion on the subject. Mm-hmm. So TNT's fan of the day is
David Kendall.
Thank you, David Kendall, who sent us this picture on Twitter saying, this is how kittens watch tech news today. See you guys? Pets works every time.
They're not even looking at the screen.
No, they don't need to be looking at the screen. No. They just need to be pets.
I think they're just like, why are you watching this?
It's a nice profile. It's a nice profile. Maybe David said, all right, strike a pose. And the cat was like, okay, I'll give you a profile. See? And then continued watching us.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened. Show us how you watch or listen to the show. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
If you want total information blackout for the upcoming Star Wars film, then it is time to put on your earmuffs. Put on your Princess Leia earmuffs,
oh, no.
Please. Close your ears. Today, Sphero announced a new friend for your BB-8, the dark droid called BB-9E from the next film. There's also, Sphero also offered a Sphero R2-D2. Very exciting. You'll remember the Sphero toy from 2015. Burke keeps one at his desk at all times. Just there protecting him. If you think those witty rejoinders were from Burke, now you know the truth. They were from BB-8. He translates them and writes them on the index card. The dark droid will cost $150, the BB-9E. And the R2-D2, did we get to see video of the R2-D2? Okay, you can take your ears. You can take your earmuffs off.
Well, I didn't want to hear anything, so okay. I've been.
You don't even like to know what the characters are or anything?
Well, I don't think... honestly, it didn't work because my ears have been covered the whole time, except that I have an earpiece in my ear.
Yeah, sorry.
It didn't work. I know too much now, Megan.
I won't won't tell you anything else because I know nothing else except for this. Director Ryan Johnson said you can call BB9E BBH8 or BB8 if you want, because that was its original name, and that's what they called him on the set, BB8.
If we didn't already know that The Last Jedi would be a dark entry into the series based on the name, the fact that this is a darker droid, maybe that's telling. I also saw something else. I'm not going to say it on the show because I don't want to spoil anything. But it looks like the theme of this next next part of the series could in fact be a lot of darkness. Mm. Just saying.
But you still have R2-D2.
Yeah, we do. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney. And please do not tweet spoilers of Star Wars. I'm pretty much information blackout. Although I do think that little BB-8 is cute.
BB-8. Burke would agree. BB-8 is Jedi, according to Burke. I love how BB-8 is just like rocking back and forth. Can't
He's
sit
nervous.
Still. Yeah,
nervous.
A little nervous. Never been on live TV before. Mm-hmm. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Kevin, our technical director and editor. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. Megan, we'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to be camping. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.